C-22. McCarthy Residence, Birchwood, Colorado. As soon as she was safely outside and Dan had closed the door behind himself and Trey, Emma returned Jack Neal's call. "You should hear this," she said to Trey as it rang. "This is going to illustrate why no one else can ever see what you recorded at Lolo." Trey couldn't hide his confusion, but he didn't speak, respecting the finger Emma held up to indicate that Jack had answered the call. She then beckoned Trey and Dan over with her hand so they could listen in. "Emma, I won't waste your time," Jack began. "I'm just going to tell you this straight up. We know that you and Timo were behind the timing of the GSC leak, and John wants in on whatever else you have on Godfrey. He knows you must have something, and he's willing to compensate you for it in whichever way you desire. But we're already getting to the point that he's telling me to feel free to use negative leverage to get it out of you. John isn't someone who holds back on the stick when the carrot doesn't work, Emma. He doesn't follow the same kind of playbook as the people we're used to dealing with." Emma rolled her eyes. "Is this the part when I'm supposed to be scared? You're always wasting my time, Jack. I don't give a rat's ass how desperate your master is for info on Godfrey, or how much trouble you'll be in when you go back to him with nothing, but I sure as hell don't appreciate your threats, and I sure as hell have better things to do than play your stupid games. So if that's all you called for, this conversation is over."
"I didn't make any threats, but I do need you to understand that John isn't playing around," Jack said. "And Emma, you really shouldn't assume that we don't have anything on Godfrey. You know me better than that."
"I'll tell you what I know," Emma said firmly. "If you had anything that could hurt Godfrey, you would have already done one of those transparently fake leaks you've been doing for the last 6 months."
Jack laughed slightly. Emma knew him well enough to know that it was a defensive laugh. "Don't believe everything you hear," was all he said in reply.
"Oh, don't worry about that," Emma retorted. "When it's coming from you, I don't believe any of it."
Emma had long known better than to trust a word Jack said, but his recent penchant for brazen duplicity had only served to sharpen her skepticism. For in recent times, Jack Neal and John Cole had become somewhat obsessed with the tactic of releasing beneficial information in the form of leaks, which they pretended to resent. They weren't the only leaders to have used such tactics, since having seen how ravenous the public's appetite for the IDA leak had proven, but unlike other less media-savvy individuals, they at least seemed to understand that the subject matter of a leak and the manner of its release were both crucial factors. The recent GSC leak, facilitated by Emma and Timo, had been by far the biggest of the year, largely because its content mattered to people. But the timing, coming as it did during a live Focus 2020 broadcast from which William Godfrey had nowhere to run, made it all the more impactful. Cole had likewise managed to gain much-needed political capital on several occasions, usually when he was struggling with some domestic crisis or another, by arranging his own leaks with content certain to generate enough headlines and social media chatter to be worthwhile. The most famous recent example was the "String them up and feed them to the dogs" case, when anti-Cole British newspapers had splashed that very headline across their front pages without realizing that this was exactly what Jack and Cole wanted them to do. Despite the many inconsistencies of his often pliable positions, John Cole was extremely and unwaveringly tough on crime, and terrorism in particular. Unlike most of his positions, this wasn't something he had to pretend to believe in. Jack's work in this regard was usually related to making sure Cole didn't say anything too strong in the wrong context. But during a particularly difficult few days amid a party conference at which some junior ministers had been whispering to the press about their dissatisfaction with Cole's leadership, Jack tactically leaked a recording of Cole addressing party strategists, as well as making it look like Cole had been the target of the kind of sniping that made the public hate career-minded politicians so much. Both the content of Cole's private comments and the media storm which followed strengthened his position among his support base. The subject was an easy one for him: terrorism. In a discussion about the deft touch needed in extending policing powers, an issue which was already in the headlines after the last-minute foiling of a large terrorist attack, which had been plotted by a suspect who'd been released by police just weeks earlier, when they had been unable to justify extending his detention, Cole stormed into a rage at the soft-touch approach desired by too many of his colleagues. It was at that point that he uttered his now infamous words, "Next time, I don't want the bastards to be released. I want them strung up, hung, drawn, and quartered. String them up and feed them to the dogs. Alive. That'll teach the rest of them. A deterrent is what these animals need, not a bloody lawyer and a court order to set them free." When the predictable demands for an apology came, Cole stood firm. His instincts were consistent with Jack's advice. More than anything else, the public hated weakness. This episode also enabled Cole to present himself as the victim of Machiavellian infighting, as well as affording him the opportunity to attack his opponents for being more concerned with the delicacy of their words than the decisiveness of their actions. The success of that faux leak prompted several more, some of which were so obviously orchestrated that Emma couldn't understand how the British press kept falling for them. She could only think that Cole's opponents were too worried about being painted as crazed meta-conspiracy theorists, as they may well have been had they suggested that Jack was behind any of the leaks, which always looked at first like they would hurt Cole, but invariably ended up helping him. The fact that there had been no leaks of any description in the last few days about Cole's relationship with Godfrey or anything else of that nature told Emma one thing. Jack had nothing. Godfrey was down, and it didn't take a genius to know that Cole would have loved nothing more than to kick him hard enough to make sure he could never get back up. So his failure to do so very strongly suggested an inability to do so. "Like I said," Jack groaned down the phone, filling a lingering silence and trying to sound less frustrated than he was. "We know that you and Timo played a part in getting the truth about Kerguelen from those GSC scientists who wrote the memo, and since the two of you obviously have contacts in Buenos Aires, we know you must have something else."
"Must we?"
Emma asked, making no effort to hide her contempt. "So you're actually telling me you have nothing?"
"I have nothing for you," she qualified.
Dan watched on uneasily as Emma dealt with Jack. He knew, courtesy of her, how important it was to never convey weakness when dealing with people like Jack, but her current confrontational approach wasn't one he was overly comfortable with. Emma, for her part, was going easy. In preparation for Timo's appearance alongside Jack on Focus 2020 the previous weekend, she had warned him that it was both unwise and dangerous to try to take the high road against the likes of Jack and Cole. Her words had been stark. "Because while you're taking the high road, they'll be busy crawling through the sewers like the rats they are, planting TNT underneath the foundations of your existence. If you don't get down there with them and stop them before they do what they set out to do, they win. It's as simple and as dirty as that."
On this occasion, she was merely having to respond to Jack's requests for information with firm rejections. There was no need for any dirty tactics yet, but keeping her composure was absolutely crucial.
"John isn't going to like this," Jack said. Emma tried not to laugh.
"Jack, for all I care, Cole can take a long walk off a short pier."
Trey couldn't help but laugh quietly at that, while Dan smiled despite still feeling uneasy.
"Is this really the way you want it to be?" Jack asked. "After all we've both been through, after all we've been through, you want to let Godfrey win?"
Emma rolled her eyes for the second time in the conversation, this time almost sending them to the top of her head in reaction to Jack's kindergarten-level attempt at persuasive psychology, and even more so at his pathetically desperate, "after all we've been through" line. But moments later, instead of a reply, she uttered a sharp and sudden cry of pain. Emma's phone fell from her hand and she crouched to the ground in agony. At her side, Dan also doubled over in pain with one hand on the back of his neck.
"What's going on? Are you guys okay?"
Trey asked, panicking at the mysterious suddenness of whatever was hurting them and with no clue as to what was going on. He then yelled much more loudly,
"I need some help out here!"
Through a pained grimace, Dan's eyes were the first to reopen. Trey focused then on Emma, who seemed to be feeling whatever she was feeling a lot more acutely than Dan was.
"Emma, what do you want me to do?" he asked. "Is this something to do with..."
"Shut up," Dan blurted out. With one hand still on his neck, he reached for Emma's fallen phone with the other and disconnected the call.
I'm okay," she said.
"It's nothing to worry about," Dan added to ease Trey's worry while he himself was concerned by how much Jack had heard, but relieved that he at least hadn't heard any more. He then moved to help Emma,
whose eyes were now fully open again, having been tightly closed during the sharpest moments of the intense, short-lived pain in her neck.
"It sure as hell didn't look like nothing," Trey said, his voice full of concern.
Dan held a finger to his lips and pointed to the kitchen door, through which he could see that the inside light had been turned on. He couldn't see Henry moving towards the ramp to find out what all the commotion was about, but he knew he was coming. Dan also knew that it would be easy enough to say something like, "Emma fell." She would think of the right words, like she always did, so keeping Trey quiet was his only real challenge. Dealing with these momentary concerns dominated Dan's focus, but he didn't completely lose sight of the bigger picture. The messengers were back, again, and his all-important triangle was likely now just one news report and a few minutes away from completion. Dan pulled Trey close and whispered in his ear to ease his mind.
"This is what happens when they're close," he said. "It happened to us both last night when you saw them at Lolo, and it happened to me when the Kerguelen bolide hit. We met them last year, and they put something in our necks, something that flares up when they're close."
Behind Dan, Emma stretched her facial muscles and quickly wiped small tears from her eyes in preparation for Henry's inevitably imminent questions. There was no longer concern on Trey's face. Now there was only full-blown fear.
"Dan, I don't want to get involved in any of this," he said.
"Sorry, Trey," Emma interjected, already sounding almost fully back on top of things.
"But it's way too late for that."